Welcome back to the Social Work Social. My name is Melanie Matthews, and I'm a registered social worker. Last season, we explored the world of mental health treatment by sharing information and stories told by social workers. This season, we're going to go even deeper by exploring how different helping professionals work with social workers to support mental health and well-being, and also to pursue social justice. Before we get started, I have two disclaimers to make. The first is that you should be aware that all the information presented in this podcast is specific to Ontario, Canada. Different professionals follow different rules and restrictions dictated by their regulatory body in their area. The second disclaimer is that nothing in this podcast should be considered medical advice or treatment. You're unique. That means that what we talk about today might not be quite right for you. So if you're interested in any topics presented here, be sure to get in contact with a professional directly. That said, let's get into today's episode. Today we're going to talk to Sandra, who's going to tell us about her experiences as a volunteer. We don't always consider how important volunteers are, and they're often an afterthought when we acknowledge the work done in communities. Sandra is going to tell us about just how important volunteers are. When I was originally writing the script for this intro, I wrote that there's no trigger warning for this episode, because although we discuss racism, we don't talk about any graphic details of physical violence. However, I then realized that I'm speaking from the position of a white person who has never experienced racism. Any incidences of racism are an act of violence against people of color. So I want to correct myself and give a trigger warning for discussions about racism and racial slurs in this episode.
My name is Sandra Whiting, and I am so delighted to be with you today, Melanie. Tell you a little bit about myself. I am a storyteller. My mother said, from the time I learned how to talk, I never shut up. I've always been talking. And my father encouraged me to always speak up. He wanted me to be a lawyer. He thought that would be the perfect job. But in Jamaica and a lot of the Caribbean, parents want ER professions, lawyer, doctor, storyteller, not so much. But I became a storyteller, among many other things, because I see myself as a person of many interests. So I'm very much a community volunteer, organizer, event organizer, programmer, done a lot of things. But the things I've been most proud of are the things I've done through volunteering.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on today to tell your story. And you actually have a really amazing story about the first time you volunteered in Canada. And I was wondering if you could start by telling us that story.
Yes. So when I came to Canada, I came on an adventure. I came in summer. Awesome. It was love at first sight. And of course, I grew up knowing about Canada because we studied Canada and the prairies and all of that good stuff and snow. And I could tell you about the history and geography of Canada, because we all grew up under the same system as Canada, part of the Commonwealth. But I grew up with a parent who strongly believed in volunteering and giving back. And so when I came here after I got used to the cold, or thought I got used to the cold and cried about the cold, I felt it was important to start giving back. And I looked up in the good old days in the directory, and I found a volunteer center, and they directed me to a place called Central Neighborhood House in the eastern part of Toronto. And I went there, and they had lots of programs for parents. And then I started off by doing play groups with kids, for parents who were being interviewed by social workers, etc. And after a while, though, I had this great idea. I wanted to become a big sister. And I remember vaguely having to be interviewed at great length to become a big sister by this organization. And they looked at me and they said, we'll get back to you. I think it took about 6-7 months. And finally, a social worker called me and said, we've got you a little sister. So I was excited. This was the day I was going to make a difference. I was going, you know, you get excited. And she picked me up, and we made our way to the home of the little girl and her mom. And I have to tell you, when I got there, it was a shock. It was a shock to me. The house was not clean. It had a lot of dogs and cats, and the children were not, they looked like they hadn't had a bath in a long time, except this one little girl who was, her face was beaming. She had on a little blue spaghetti, a sundress, and she had two ribbons in her hair, two red ribbons. And she looked so excited, and she had on little white sandals. And we came in, and the mother took one look at me and said to the social worker, "I am not going to have no N-word person looking after my child." I have to tell you, I was angry. I was angry that this woman dared to think she could call me such a word I didn't know what it meant anyway. And I was angry because I wanted to become a big sister. I was upset, but I remember it just came out of my mouth right away. I said, "You don't have to worry, madam, because I've never met an N-word person in my life." She didn't know what to say, and the social worker turned red, and the little girl, who I later found out her name was Vivian, said, "Mom, I want her to be my big sister. Please, Mom, please." So after a little bit of discussion, it was agreed that I could indeed have Vivian to become my little sister. And I had her for 3 years. And it was a very good symbiotic relationship. I remember when she first came to my house, she said, "Your house is so clean." And one day she said to me, "Me mom says, you people don't speak English." I said, "Vivian, what are we talking now?" She said, "That's what I tell my mom." And I hope I made a difference, a contribution to her to understand that you don't judge people by what people tell you. And that was such an ignorant statement her mom had made. We talked about it once, and I said, "Your mom said that out of ignorance." So my first volunteering was Vivian. Well, not really my first, but my first true volunteering was Vivian. And I made that decision to take her that day. I could have said no, but she wanted it so much. I wanted it so much. And why shouldn't it happen? And that was my first real volunteering experience in Canada. And one that I truly always, always loved. That's the end of that little story.
That's such an amazing story. You know, I've never asked, how old were you when you
did this? I was about 22. Yeah. 22 or 23, yeah. And Vivian was 8. And yes, it was quite the thing when I took her out, because people would go, "Where did you get this child? Whose child is she? What are you doing with her?" It was interesting. Her mother was worried about her end, but my friends are also worried on my end. "Are you sure you want to take this on?" But it was the best thing I ever did.
What was your friend's concern for you when they asked, "Are you sure you want to take this on?"
Well, a Black woman with a white child, what are you doing with her? Are you babysitting her? It's very few people ever saw it in the wider community as a relationship of me actually doing something for her. It was very, my friends knew that, but the rest of the world were, "Oh, are you her babysitter?" "No, I'm her friend. I'm her big sister." "Oh, where did you get her from?" You know, that it had a lot of those. We had a lot of those. And then what happened, she told her friends. And when I would go to pick her up sometime, there'd be two little girls, other little girls going, "Can I come too?" And I'd say, "Find your mother and ask them." And sometime I'd have three of them. We'd go to the pool and they're having a great time. And people, "Where do you get these three little girls from?" So that was another part of it that was kind of interesting, you know? So, yeah, but I think she would have got something from the relationship. I hope she did.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like she did because I mean, you taught her a lot of things about not judging people by the color of their skin or not just believing what other people tell you without using any critical thought yourself, which is a huge thing for an 8-year-old to learn.
Yes, for sure. For sure. It was good. It was good. I often wonder about her because it ended on not a great note. She had her mom had like six kids. Her mom liked to have babies, it looked like. And one day I went there, and her younger sister, who must have been about six, had some cuts on her foot. And I said, "What happened?" And she said, "My mom's boyfriend made her walk on glass as punishment." I had to call the social worker. And the social worker then removed all the children from the house. And I had to tell Vivian goodbye. And that was one of the hardest. She cried. She cried. I cried. But it was the right thing to do because I was so worried about her personal safety in that home. But anyway, that was a sad ending to that.
That is such a difficult part about social work because, I mean, obviously the children couldn't stay in an environment like that. You can't be forcing children to walk across glass.
Yeah.
But it meant that they had to take a very stable influence out of Vivian's life. They had to take away a relationship that was really beneficial and important to her. And that's really a shame.
Yeah, I often wondered if I could have fought harder to figure out where she was going. And yeah. I think being a social worker is one of the hardest jobs, teaching and social work, because to the outside world, you are coming sometimes as not a savior or a helper. You're seen to be pulling people apart. And that has happened sometimes wrongly. And when people don't understand cultural differences, or I think there's more work done on that. You could tell me, I am sure there is. But it's not an easy job. It's not an easy job.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is something that social workers have been working very hard on. I had a class on that during my master's degree where we talked about how social workers have often had this white savior complex where they would go into the homes of Black people and Indigenous people primarily and take away the kids because they perceive them as not being well cared for, when in reality, it was, just cultural, like of course, there's going to be differences in the way people take care of their children. Of course, there's going to be differences in the foods they feed them and how they live and how they interact with each other. They're cultural differences. And we can't be coming in and saying, you're not subscribing to a white way of living, so you can't have your children anymore.
It's a fine line because I do believe that sometimes when there is abuse, the fear of some social workers turn a blind eye because they said, "Oh, well, we can't get involved." And I go, "Really, why not?" But there, I've had friends who one, she was a foster mom and she herself is a social worker, and she sent the kid to school with her lunch, and they called social services because they felt the lunch was not the correct lunch. I was like, "Are you for real?" And she had to be interviewed, and over lunch, which the child liked, and the social worker felt it wasn't a proper meal, a patty and a coca bread, which is a Jamaican thing, and the social worker going, "How could you get sent that for lunch?" Well, that is going too far for me. But anyway, I digress, Melanie. I digress.
It is very interesting how that's targeted, though, because I remember my very, very first field placement when I was getting my college diploma in child and youth work. I was in school for a very long time. I have multiple degrees and letters after my name. But I remember during that very first field placement that I did, there was a child who came to school with a single slice of cheese. Like, those Kraft slices that come in the little plastic? That's what he brought for lunch. And we would often do things like,
And teachers would bring extra food, or we had a breakfast program. We would go get the extras and give them to this child to make sure that he was fed. And that was wonderful. Of course, we should do that. But Children's Aid was not involved. And why wasn't Children's Aid involved at that time?
Exactly. There is a child who definitely needed some kind of intervention or discussion. It's not easy. And I know that is why in the Black African Caribbean community, there's such a distrust of involving people when people really need help. But they're very afraid to say anything because they're feared that the child will be taken. And I know there seems to be a lot of work now trying to bridge that gap and have more social workers from the communities actually be there to say, look, you might want to think about it this way, you know?
It would be really nice if Children's Aid would take them more of the role of an educator and a support system for, people who maybe have very good intentions with their children, but don't have the knowledge and awareness and skills to be, a really good parent.
Right. Poverty is a real thing. And you find through all strata, it's the poverty and the miseducation or lack of education that makes parents lash out, or they're working two jobs sometimes, or they can't find a job. And the children bear the brunt of a lot of that. Yes, it's a real thing. It's a real thing.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that is likely what was happening with the child I was talking about with the single slice of cheese. He was a white child, and it's likely that he was living in poverty. I knew the apartment building he was living in around the corner from the school, and it was a very cheap rent. And I can say that with absolute certainty because I was also living in that building at the time, and my rent was about $575 a month, all inclusive.
Wow. Yes. When did you ever find that rent? I've been here. I've never found rent.
It's definitely not in Toronto. It was in.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah,
Yes.
London, Ontario, around 12 years ago.
Really? Nobody will find anything like that in Ontario, in Toronto anyway, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
No, definitely not. So, do you remember what it was like your first interaction with that social worker? Did you come in with any preconceived notions? Did you have any idea of what it was going to be like to interact with a social worker?
I will be frank with you, absolutely not. I came across, I would say, very cocky. I was so sure I was the best thing since sliced bread that they would just be going, oh my goodness, we have somebody for you tomorrow. I was interviewed and I'm sure they did their checking, which they should. I was surprised it took so long. And I figured after. The reason was they didn't know what to do with me because who were they going to give me to? And I will share that after Vivian, I went back and I said, next child is a Black child. Has to be. And they went, oh, I said, has to be. And I'll share that one. When I met her, she lived in Regent Park. Her mom was originally from Guyana. And when I went to the house that day, first of all, the house was immaculate. That child was scrubbed from top to bottom. She had braided her hair so tight. She was clean and the little clothes was pressed. She was six. Her name was Allison. And she was not a happy kid. This one did not want a big sister at all. And her mother wanted a big sister. And she said, this is the lady. Now you listen to me. Don't give her any trouble, you know. Big up. Poor child. We get in the car and she says, I hate cars. I said, okay. Do you like to walk? I hate walking. Do you like taking the subway? I hate the subway. And then she says, what are you, 100? She asked me, are you 100? And that was my introduction to my next little sister. Totally different experience. Totally different. I had her for 22 years. I sent her to camp. I sent her to paid for school. I became part of the family through thick and thin. it was such a totally different experience. I didn't have to explain who I was. I had a mother who was, and her brother, Allison's brother, was very upset. He didn't have anybody, and she would be moaning, and he goes, "You're lucky you have a big sister. I don't have anybody." So totally different experience, but it did not deter me. The first one did not deter me from volunteering again, because it's important. It's important, you know, two different experiences.
And it does feel as though that's such a strongly held value of yours, that volunteering and giving back is important.
Absolutely. It is in my bones that we are here. And my family went through middle class. There are times when we were not wealthy. And there was a time when things improved. So I grew up in a house that had five helpers, we call them, maids. One to wash, one to cook, one to clean. We didn't have, but my father believed we should know how to do these things as well. And there came a time we only had one. And my mom, he said, "You all have to help cook." And we were like, "Cook us?" But yeah, we had to do all those things. But he wanted us to understand that we had a head start and we must not take it for granted. And we had to give back. And it's something I feel so strongly about. It makes you better becoming a volunteer. It makes you forget your troubles. It makes you give back and it makes you get back. So I get back a lot more than I give. Always. Everybody should volunteer at something at some point in their life.
What kind of volunteer activities are you doing now?
Well, I work on a number of boards, even though I say I don't want to be on any more boards, but I became what I call more a Uber volunteer. I am not a good door volunteer. And by that, I mean, I'm not the person you're going to see doing the tickets. I'm the person planning it. I'm the person coming up with it. I love raising money. I love asking people to support organizations. So I work with a couple of organizations and assist in that way. And then I donate my widow's mite, because that's another thing. Just because you don't have a lot of money, you can still give $5. You know, your $5, if you have 50, is as much as the person who has $1,000, who has 10,000. You know what I mean? It's all relative. And so we must all find that, dig deep to find that giving back. And I mentor a lot of young people who are always asking me for advice. I love giving advice. Not always welcome sometimes, but I tell people, the only people I give the most advice to are people I love and care about. So if you see me call you and you see me say something, it's because you are in my sphere. If I don't say anything, leave you alone.
Everyone gives back what they're able to. Yeah, I really liked how you say that it's all proportionate. It's just as meaningful to give your $1 or $5 as it is for celebrities who are giving $100,000.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the one thing I like with Barack Obama's campaign when he did it. He said, "Send what you can." And it was those small things. He got the big ones, but he got the small ones. And those small ones made a difference. And so I always tell people, you don't know when you pass somebody on the street, some people say, "Well, why should I give them $2? And I say, "Why not? You don't miss that $2. "Well, they're going to do what with it?" Why do you care? And how do you know that $2 could be the one time they got a cup of coffee that day? So if you can, do it. Volunteer, give, it's important.
I think it's probably obvious to everyone that's listening that you are a very good storyteller. How do you use your storytelling?
That's a very interesting question, Melanie. I'm not sure, but first of all, I'm a performer as well. So I do speak to lots of different audiences. And I was thinking back, I've spoken to social workers, Black social workers. I've hosted conferences. I am now working in the court system as an interpreter for the Jamaican language. And then I share my stories with friends and all these mediums. And I'm always amazed people come back and say, remember when you said that? And I went, when was that? Stories matter, Melanie, as you know. All our stories matter. And so if you can find a way to share whatever story, whatever you're passionate about, somebody will hear you. Somebody will hear you. Never know who, but somebody will come back one day and say, Miss, you remember when you told me that? And you go, really? Yes, and I get so excited. I love talking, as I started out by saying.
It is really incredible what a lasting impact your words and your actions can have on someone. It's same from that very first field placement experience I had. I remember years later, a young girl came running up to me in a Bath and Body Works of all places. Mm-hmm. She was one of the employees there. And she came up to me and she's like, the things you told me were so meaningful when you were in my fourth grade classroom. Thank you so much for what you had done for me. And it was such an incredible feeling because I didn't know that I had made such a big difference at the time. It wasn't until years later when someone told me. So it is really important to remember that you can make a difference that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I saw an interview with Maya Angelou with Oprah, and she was talking about this very thing that we don't know our impact sometimes. And she mentioned she was in a high-end store and she said, I saw two little sisters and they were stealing. And I went up to them and said, put it back. And they looked at her and she said, put it down. And they said, what's it to you? She said, I care about you. Look at how beautiful, you have beautiful faces. And I hope your hearts become beautiful and they won't this way by stealing. And she said, years later, this young woman came up to her and said, Dr. Angelou, do you remember me? And she said, no, I was that girl. And what you said to me that day really spoke to me. Thank you. I went back to school and I'm so glad I met you. Thank you. And that is what we need to remember. And her telling that story always stuck with me. Always. And she also said, when you go and you see somebody being miserable, the checkout line, they're being slow, stop and say, are you okay? Are you having a bad day? Instead of getting angry. And the very next day, I went and the supermarket, she was throwing my eggs and battering my groceries. And normally I would have, hello. And I said to her, is everything all right? She said, oh, I'm so sorry. I just got news. My mother's in the hospital and they won't let me go. I said, you stop what you're doing right now. Finish checking me out. And I went with her to her manager. I went, don't know this girl. And he goes, I said, she needs to go. And always remember that. I try to remember it. Always stop and think. Your words make a difference.
Absolutely. So powerful. I think that we've already touched on this, but just as we're getting to the end, if you had to sum it up in just one or two sentences, what would you want people to take away from what they heard today about volunteering?
You must do it. You are called to do it. It makes you a better person. And giving back, your heart, your spirit will be full. And you will be so thrilled you did it. You'll thank me when you hear these words. You'll say, you know, I must try it. And when you go home and it's making you feel full of joy, you'll say, giving back gives you joy.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to share your story and your perspectives and everything today.
Thank you for having me, Melanie. Such a pleasure. You have so many stories of your own. One of these days, I'm going to reverse the roles and ask you to tell me your story, because I know it's awesome as well.
Thank you so much to Sandra for sharing her story. Next week, we're going to talk to Olivia, who's a politician turned advocate for social change. Thanks for listening to The Social Work Social. By sharing information and stories, we hope that you will gain new knowledge and empathy for those who are different from you. All of us have unique backgrounds and experiences, but through our stories, we can learn to relate to one another. Our communities are currently facing extreme challenges, and we all have different strengths and skills that we bring to the table to help combat those challenges. Through working together, we can make a difference. I challenge you to go outside of your comfort zone to find an issue that you can lend your support. Tune in next Friday for another episode of The Social Work Social.